Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
All day long.
Here's John Williams.
Even when I'm not here. Hi. It's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. I'm here weekdays from 1 to 3, except for when I'm not.
Lord have mercy.
Thank you, John, for filling in for me today. This is John Williams. I'm back. I'm also here on Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Hey, yesterday we had White Sox baseball. Right here on this fine little radio station of ours, and as much as I wanted to stay up on the day's events and the nonstop talk about the Oscars, and I did, and you know, Bertrand goes, oh, enough already, but I'm like, ah, that was the topic yesterday. I was very interested in it all, and you were able to keep up with that online. It was nice to hear the White Sox here on WGN Radio, and I was just thinking, man, 4 weeks from, literally 1 month from Thursday is opening day. And I don't know if that sounds like a long time or very soon to you, but it's amazing what a lifestyle change that will be for the city, the players, and you and me when we won't be doing exhibition games on weekends or on the occasional weekday. We will be doing Major League Baseball, and you and I will be going to the stadiums, going to Wrigley Field, going to the bank, and wearing clothes not unlike the ones we're wearing today. 1,000 years ago, I went to a Cubs home opener with Tom Peterson and Spike Odell and wore a short-sleeved shirt because it was that warm. Hard to imagine. So our best to everybody. I voted today in the city of Chicago. You didn't if you don't live in Chicago. And if you do live in Chicago, you probably didn't either. Ryan Burrow is telling us 18% of the people who could vote for mayor and alderman, et cetera. There weren't that many. What's it? Mayor, alderman, treasurer, and something else. 18% of us did, but the vast majority of us did not, are not so far.
Did you 100% know who you were going to vote for mayor before you stepped into your polling place?
No.
Yep, me neither.
Literally, as I was looking at it, I went, crap.
Yeah.
And it's not like I haven't heard or paid attention. Somewhere Justin Kaufman is crying because Justin is so pumped for this. He's doing our coverage tonight. And I think that's a fair and appropriate thought. I know a lot of people feel that way, but none of them cut through the clutter for me, right? Like, I know Preckwinkle, I know Daly, I know a lot of these names, I really do. And a lot of them at first seemed really good to me. And then, you know, I don't know if this is the media or just the nature of candidates, but the longer they're in the race, the more I find out about them, the more I find out things I don't like about them.
Yeah.
And I was just left with a sort of, yeah, you'll do.
And think about it this way. We were both like that. And we have this advantage because most or all of these candidates have been on our airwaves at some point.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And like so many people don't get the opportunity to listen to us as much as we listen to us or, you know, even see anything besides the commercials. So
I know that's the thing, too. I was how much did Chance the Rapper give to Amara? Was it the Tribune had all 14 candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of money they had and who the top campaign donor was for them. And Chance the Rapper gave Amara, was it, oh, Lord. Producer Al, if you're going to have to look that up, how much did Chance the Rapper donate to Amara Anya's campaign? When you find that out, let me know, because it was a lot of money. And my only point about that is that it must be a real leap of faith or measure of confidence when you write a check that large for somebody. And I know Chance has. Do you have that? Elif, how much was it, please?
$400,000.
That's what I thought.
Hmm.
400 grand. Of course, you only got to be one of the top two. And then they'll have a runoff election because it doesn't appear as though any of them are going to get more than 50% of the vote today. So in a month, then we'll have a runoff between the top two, at which time one of them will have to get more than 50% of the vote. You know, I've been spending a lot of time in the last day or so thinking about ranked choice voting. And in ranked choice voting, and I've had conversations with people today about how that would have maybe helped some people today. Say there's a candidate, one of the 14, LaShawn Ford, or pick 'em, people who are not high in the polls, right? You vote for whoever you want. I'm happy that you're voting. But if there's a candidate that does not appear likely to win, you may choose not to vote for that person because you want to cast a strategic vote for someone who you think could win, maybe to keep somebody you really don't want from winning. Okay, I'll just give you two names, and only because they're high profile, Daley and Preckwinkle. Say you really don't want Daley to win. You've had enough of the Daleys. Say your first choice is Willie Wilson. You want to vote for Willie Wilson, but you're afraid if you don't, then somebody's going to vote for Daley. And you might be smart to vote for Preckwinkle or Lightfoot, somebody who could maybe bump him out of those top two spots, right? People do this all of the time. They do this with their presidential votes. You wanted to vote for Bernie, but you knew you should vote for Hillary because otherwise he'll take votes away. Stuff like that, right? So in the case of the mayoral race, we could have something called ranked choice voting. Ranked choice voting means you don't vote for mayor. You vote for all 14 candidates, and you rank them in order. Now you could say, my first choice is Willie Wilson. And you're thinking, oh, well, he's not going to win. But that's okay, because then you could make your second choice that more strategic one. And then I'm going to vote for Tony Preckwinkle to make sure that Bill Daley doesn't become president. Because here's what ranked choice voting does. After they count all of the ballots, whoever's in last place, they take those ballots. Say it's Willie Wilson. This is just an example, and I'll bet you it won't be. But say it was Willie Wilson. They would then take all the people who voted for Willie Wilson for mayor. First choice, Willie Wilson. And they'll say, okay, we're taking those out. Who's their second choice? And then they apply those votes to those candidates. So if your second choice after Willie Wilson was finished in last was Tony Preckwinkle, your vote now goes to Tony Preckwinkle. Isn't that interesting?
This seems very complicated.
You know, and
well,
that's
with 14.
Right. Well, you don't have to vote for all 14 in order, but you could.
Uh-huh.
But I think a lot of people have been faced with, here's who my heart is. I want to vote for this valiant, Cahote character who's probably not going to win, but doggone it, we need to send a message. But now my message is going to get lost because that person won't win. So you don't do that. Well, ranked choice voting would say, no, vote with your heart. And then later on, vote with your head, if you like, right? Because once your candidate is out, finishes in last place after they count them all up, they'll then take your second choice until somebody gets 50% of the vote. I know that's complicated.
Something that I noticed when I was voting, I was like, oh my gosh, Bill Daley isn't even on the ballot. How can he not be here? And then I realized he's under William Daley. And it also brought up a good point, like, hey, maybe they should have the name on the ballot that they have on their advertising material.
Say that again?
They should have the name on the ballot that they have on their advertising material.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes they do. They'll put it in quotes, right?
Okay. Yeah, I don't think this was in quotes.
But he was in William H. Daley or whatever.
Yeah.
Instead of Bill Daley.
And all the signs around Chicago, Bill Daley, Bill Daley. Which, I mean, yeah, you have to think about it for a second. You're like, oh, yeah, Bill, William, whatever. But I don't know.
One other thing about ranked choice voting, and I won't bother you with those statistics the way I was a minute ago. But they use this to vote for mayor in Portland and in Oakland and in St. Paul. And in Minneapolis and in the state of Maine, they send their congressional delegation with ranked choice voting.
Those are all pretty savvy cities.
I guess. I think we're as smart as the rest of them, though. I think, you know, because while I just explained the theory, you really don't have to understand it all. They just go, hey, who's your first choice for mayor? Who's your second choice for mayor? If they don't win, who's your third choice? And then they'll handle the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and by the way, in Maine, with one of their congresspeople, listen to this. This is fascinating. Everybody voted for Congress in the first and second districts. Maine sends two delegates to the United States Congress. So it's District 1 and District 2. And in one of the districts, when they counted up the votes, one of the candidates had 46.1%. The other one had 45.9%. 0.2% less.
Wow.
So the Republican wins by 0.2%, 46-1 to 45-9, just 0.2% Republican wins. The Republican in Maine got the most votes, but neither of them got 50%. Now think about that. So what the people have said is that to that Republican who got the most votes, more people don't want you to represent us than do. You got 46%. 54% of the people who voted said, we don't want you, effectively. 46% of them said for your opponent, and 8% said for the independent.
Hmm.
So maybe this isn't the best way. Whoever finishes first is not really the will of the people in Maine, because more people said somebody else than the person who finished in first place. Remember, the winner gets, in this case in Maine, 46.1% of the vote, and the Democrat had 45.9, 0.2% less. They have ranked choice voting in Maine. So you know what they do? Who finished last? The independent did. Oh. They took everybody who voted for the independent, and they said, who's your second choice? Who did you rank second? And more people said the Democrat than the Republican. So then they counted up the votes again. And now, by less than a tenth of a vote, a tenth of a percent, the Democrat now had more votes than the Republican. And the Democrat is sitting in the Congress now. So the Republican is sitting there going, I live in America. I campaigned fair and square. I ran the race. I got the most votes. First place votes, people said, I want you. But since I didn't get 50%, they took those other votes, threw in their second choices, and now the second place finisher is the one that finishes first. And that's how ranked choice voting works. And I don't even care how confusing that sounds. The bottom line is that the person who got the most votes on election day, first place votes in this case, did not win. And you know, you can argue till the cows come home about whether or not that's a good idea, but that's the way it is. That's called ranked choice voting. And again, as complicated as all of the machinations of that sounds, you don't even have to worry about that. Now, the question is, do you still believe in that principle? Think about this. Remember crazy Jesse Ventura in Minnesota who became the governor?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. How did the smart, talk about an educated population. Minneapolis and St. Paul, very high income, very smart people. Minnesota is a well-educated state. Jesse becomes the governor of Minnesota. Now, how did that happen? So Chance gives $400,000 to Amara Anya's campaign. Somebody texted in, 630, said, don't forget Kanye West also donated to her. Producer Aleph, I'll need you to find out, how much did Kanye give to Amara? I want that too, please. How much did Kanye give? By the way, Chicago votes, and when the polls close tonight, turn to WGN-TV for complete coverage. Us here on the radio, too. For the race for mayor, get all the results and expert analysis. Watch WGN-TV tonight. Starting at 7. Do you have that, Producer Olive? How much did Kanye give Amara Anya's campaign?
Kanye West donated $126,460 to Amara Anya's campaign.
Thank you. $126K. $126K. Line 1 wanted to... Oh, no, I said... before I go to Kevin on line 1. So just a quick analysis of voting theory in America, right? So whoever gets the most votes should win, right? Whoever gets the most votes should win. In 1998, hold on, let me pull it up here. In the 1998 Minnesota gubernatorial election, Jesse Ventura, the World Wrestling Federation figure, or was it WWE? He was a WWE guy. Well, at that time, it was the WWF. Anyway, pro wrestler, and he had a military background too. Anyway, Jesse Ventura got 37% of the vote. 63% of the people that voted in Minnesota said, we don't want you to be mayor. But he got 37% of the vote. Norm Coleman, the Republican, got 34% of the vote. And Skip Humphrey, have you ever heard of the name Humphrey? He was the Democrat. He got 28% of the vote. So generally it was a third, a third, a third. But Jesse Ventura had the larger of those three. So with 37% of the vote, Jesse Ventura becomes the governor of Minnesota. Now, if that had ranked choice voting, he probably wouldn't have been governor because people would have said, I'm all in for Jesse. But people who would vote for the other two probably wouldn't have made him their second choice. He would have dropped off. Incidentally, not to dwell on this, well, to dwell on it a little bit. That is how they vote for Best Picture Oscars. You wonder, how does the Oscar happen? I listened to three radio shows yesterday that analyzed and commiserated over the Green Book winning Best Picture. But remember, for the Oscars, they use ranked choice voting, the very system we're describing. Kevin, you're on WGN. You're on the air. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, John, I know you're talking about ranked choice voting, but, you know, and to your point about the person with the most votes wins, you know, we in the last, 15 or 16 years had two situations where we had presidential elections that did not go to the winner of the popular vote. Al Gore lost to George W. Bush, and Hillary lost to Trump. So, and that's because of how we have our electoral college set up.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that, I mean, that's, you know, one of the things, just one of the quirky things about our democracy. But I don't know that I think that we should continue that, but that is just one of the anomalies that happens.
Yeah, I guess so. So this notion that, that's a good point, isn't it? I mean, the idea that whoever gets the most votes wins, we've already reconciled ourselves to that. That's not true. Hillary got the most votes, she didn't win. Al Gore got the most votes, he didn't win. If for different reason, not ranked choice voting, but because of the Electoral College. So
that's correct.
We're kind of already groovy with that, or we're not groovy with that. good point. Hey, thanks for calling. Thanks for listening.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You bet. Bye, Kevin. Have a good day. It's 128. Steve Bertrand has WGN Radio News. And then, by the way, I'll give you a Constitution quiz. If you get the quiz questions right, you win pizzas. That's how we're going to get people to vote in America. Okay. All right. 312-981-7200. I have a quiz that people that become U.S. citizens have to pass. It's called the Constitution Quiz. You may have taken it in the eighth grade. Call me now or text. And if you get these questions right, you'll win a Lou Malnati's pizza, which is the reason a lot of people actually climb over the wall. Wait, you've got Lou's? I'm in. All right. If you get it right, it's real simple, too. Producer Elephant, I talked about this. She said, all right, let's give them 10 questions. They've got to get 60% of them right. No. If you just get one, you win a pizza. Tom, are you ready for your Lou Malnati's pizza?
Probably not, because I wish my family were listening to this. They think that I know everything.
Right. Well, boy, you better show them up now. You better show that you do.
By the way, John, before you ask the question, think about that 30% turnout. And if the top two get 20%, that's 6% of the eligible voters is picking the top two.
For the city of Chicago, yeah. Somebody texted me, though, Kevin, and they said, or Tom, and they said, oh, well, what we think is it's not the massive indifference it appears. It's just people are going to wait until we have the final two. And then instead of getting 18%, you know, we'll get a higher number.
Yeah, but the point is, and they probably won't even get to 20%, the two winners. Their leaders are sitting at 14% now.
Yeah.
So you're going to have a fraction of the populace deciding the top two.
Yeah, but everybody gets to vote again if we have a runoff.
But their choices are limited to the
to
top
those
two.
Yeah, but my only, maybe this isn't so hopeful after all, Steve, but all I'm saying is when we do narrow the field from 14 to 2, the voter turnout will be higher than 18%. It'll be 40% or something like that, because then you've got a more of a handle on it. They've had more time to run negative ads. It's going to be A or B, not A through J.
Okay, but the choice of A or B will have gotten in there with 8,000 votes.
Yeah, right, yeah, sure enough. Well, it's kind of like primaries, too, right? That the primaries are really the most important thing, or maybe we don't appreciate the importance of primaries, but far few people vote for the primaries, right? But that's how you got Hillary and Donald, right? If you said, oh, man, these are the choices we have, well, we had more choices, but the way the primary system works. All right, you ready for your Q, and then you give me the A?
Thank you, sir.
All right, Tom, here we go. What is the supreme law of the land? Think about that.
The Constitution.
The Constitution is correct. By the way, that's one of the tougher questions on this. I'm kind of discouraged that this Constitution quiz is only passed by less than half of the population. I've got a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Go visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. Talk to Elephant here, okay, Tom? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Bye now. Don, are you ready? It's really not more complicated than that, Don. You ready?
I am ready, King John.
And by the way, Jen, if you want to chime in, you can. Or Steve, if you want to be like a lifeline. The idea of self-government is in the first three words of the Constitution. What are the first three words of the Constitution?
Well, it's, I know what the first three words of the Declaration of Independence. We the people.
We the people is right! Ding, ding, ding. The first three words of the Declaration are...
We the people.
No, no.
Oh,
that,
of the Declaration?
Yeah.
We hold these truths.
Wait, well then which is the one that says when in the course of human events? I think it's when in the...
Yep, you're right. When in the your buddy TJ would be very unhappy with me for botching that one, but well, I got the pizza one right.
You absolutely did. We the people.
The pizza one is all that matters.
And really, isn't that citizenship, smittitionship? It's really about the pizza, and you did get the pizza question right. Hold on, Don. We'll send one out to Gardner.
Thanks,
okay.
John.
Bye now. Joy, are you ready?
I hope so. I was ready to break into We the People School of Rock song back then.
How does that one go? Because I remember some of them. How does the Constitution song go?
We the People, in order to more form a more perfect union, provide the concepts. There's six of them. And I could sing them all to you, but it would be embarrassing because my voice is bad. But provide justice for all and provide security and for ourselves and our posterity, do or day.
Nicely done. So that's the Constitution song. You know the Bill of Rights song. I'm just a, or the Bill song. I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only
right.
A bill.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Sitting here on top of Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the Capitol City. Can you do?
And you get a bus stop. You get buses stopping at the railroad tracks because of that.
What's another one you can do from the old School of Rock?
The zero.
Let's hear it.
But the elbow room was another good one. Where they talked about the expansion, Zero My Hero, all the, you know, the literature ones that they used to do that helped you remember how to spell words and all that good stuff.
Is there anything
I
like
the DVD,
that?
So
is there anything
is that?
Like that in the popular culture now? Are we teaching kids
no.
stuff through music? We,
no.
Those things, and the thing is, too, kids don't sit around and watch cartoons on Saturday anymore. We were a captive audience. And those things, those plus in the news, were really, really good. I guess now if kids clicked on a site or a YouTube video that taught them the Constitution and math, but I don't know that that's happening right now.
I wish. I used to show it at school to my seniors, because and they loved it. They thought it was the greatest thing.
All right, this is a tough one, former teacher. You ready?
Oh, I hope so, boy.
What is one right or freedom from the First Amendment? The First Amendment grants us five. This asks for yes. one, but I'm going to ask for three.
I'll give you five because the things that I taught kids, the acronym was SPAR, speech, press, religion, assembly, speech, press, religion, a religion, assembly, and petition.
Yeah, so SPAR with two P's, SPPAR, speech, press, petition, the government,
assembly and religion.
You know what? You deserve more than a pizza.
I was going to say, give her
oh
the loo
gosh.
Salad, maybe some tiramisu.
Tiramisu is a nice choice there. Hold the line, talk to producer Olive. We'll make sure we take
Thank
care of you,
you,
okay?
Thank you.
Oh, wow, we got some listeners got it going on. All right, we've exhausted our pizzas now, so we're on to the desktop indoor weather station.
Oh, that's cool, too.
Sell it, girl. Sell it.
I just wish I was on the other side right now so I can be calling in and winning these prizes.
Would you have known all five of the powers afforded us by the First Amendment?
I think I would have.
Oh, nicely done.
Yeah.
All right, how about this one? This one's kind of... Carl, this one's going to take some thinking. Are you ready?
Okay, hey, and one thing, can we write you in it for mayor?
Yes, sir, you may. No, don't. Do not do that. No. King, yes. If your ballot says, do you want John to be king, make that a yes vote, okay?
All right.
What is the economic system in the United States? The economic system of the United States is what?
And you said you might have a lifeline.
All right, we're going to traffic now. Jen DeSalvo, who seems to be doing pretty well on this. Jen, are you still over there in traffic?
I am.
Yeah, you got quiet all of a sudden. What is the economic system of the United States?
We are a capitalist society.
Capitalism, she says. She goes with capitalism. You want to use that, or you want to use your own?
Well, I'll use it.
The correct answer is capitalism. We are a capitalist economy. I would have accepted market economy or whoever has the most wins. But capitalism is correct. Nicely done,
Jen. Okay, we can share that. We can share that prize.
So, I really do want one, but you deserve it.
So you'll know what the humidity is, and then she can run over and find out what the temperature is or something like that. You will share the weather station, okay?
Yeah, we'll just text it. What's the temperature? It's this. Okay.
Hold on a Perfect. Second, Carl. Appreciate you listening. He's got the desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weather Makers Heating and Cooling. The 60 Minute Men, call 855-955-HVAC. All right, one last one, and then we're done with this. And that's going to be Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth. How are you?
Hi. I don't know how I can better all of those people
those
before me.
People are doing really well, aren't they?
Really, really well. It's really encouraging, isn't it?
It kind of is, now that you mention it, on this day where we're bemoaning the fact that we don't really seem to care enough to participate. All right, I'm going to ask you a series of questions. Let's see how many you get right. You ready?
All right.
We elect a U.S. senator for how many years? How many years does a U.S. senator serve?
4 years.
4 years for U.S. Senate is incorrect. Senators serve four...
2 years. 2 years?
Six.
Oh, my gosh.
Six. So I'm going to send Jen DeSalvo over to your place.
Yes.
With a chalkboard and a wooden ruler.
I know, I know.
Spank your hands every time you get one wrong.
I don't do no spanking.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you for listening, Elizabeth. I know.
You know, 6 years does seem like a long time, though. So,
it is.
So
right.
I feel her.
What she was answering was how long should they serve?
Yes, exactly.
But the correct answer is Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth both go for six, and that's why they don't always occur on your ballot. And then members of the House, of course, go for two. Governors go for four. And in some states, like, what was it, Virginia, they only go for one term.
One term, yeah. Is it a six-year term or a four-year term? I think it's four.
In Virginia, I think it's 1 4-year term. So this whole thing about their governor and lieutenant governor and who was next in line, the attorney general there, whatever it was, or the speaker, at least it was a problem they would have only had to live with for 4 years. What's the status of the Virginia governor now? What's happening over there? Do we know? Has that been published?
He is still
governor,
holding
right?
on.
Yeah.
Right. I was going to make a joke, and then, thank God.
Really,
in a rare moment of self-awareness.
How good of you.
Right.
Oh, you should host a show here on WGN. Okay, so that's just our little constitutional quiz. When asked, less than half of us get enough of these right.
In 1787, I'm told our founding fathers did agree
Schoolhouse Rock here.
To write a list of principles for keeping people free.
Sounds kind of like Ella.
The USA was just starting out.
She is a good singer.
Brand new country. And so our people spelled it out, the things that we should be. And they put those principles down on paper and called it the Constitution. And it's been helping us run our country ever since.
This does sound like Ella.
The first part of the Constitution is called the Preamble and tells what those founding fathers set out to do. We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility.
That song our caller was doing.
Provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare at hand, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain.
Nicely done.
I love those so much.
When I was learning all that, my mom used to walk around the house singing it, so I would get it in my head, and I'm like, oh, come on, Mom. But yeah, they're fun.
One of our listeners texted in and said that Schoolhouse Rock may not be a thing, but a lot of teachers make their own songs. And somebody said, get a load of this, says here, we learned the Table of Elements, which was crazy amazing. I don't know what that song is, but it must go on for a very long time because there's a lot of elements.
Like 239? Is that what it is?
All right, here we go. Aleph, how many elements are there on the periodic table, please? Because each of those is going to be a verse in this song.
Oh, wow.
Or line. Strontium, carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen. It goes on and on and on. 773 says, hey, John, if you did not vote, you do not get to complain. About the voting system we have in this country, it says here, hardly a quirk to say that Iowa and South Dakota matter as much in choosing a president as the city of Chicago. I told you earlier how they use ranked choice voting in Maine, and a lot of you kind of dropped off. Welcome back.
But it was exhausting, though. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but it's so, I get it, but it's, look, we can't even go out to vote for one person right now.
Let me see, John. In ranked choice voting, a Democrat who actually got less votes than the Republican ended up winning because neither of them originally got 50% of the vote. And in 2016, the Democrat got almost 3 million more votes than the winner through the Electoral College. That decided who should be president. Maybe, just maybe, the U.S. needs a better way to run elections. Signed, Carol. Do you have that, Ella, for us? Go ahead. How many elements, please?
There are 118 elements on the periodic table, John.
118?
That's what I was going to say.
They go up, though, to like 239 in power or whatever? They're not like numbered. Don't they skip numbers? Am I just making myself sound like an idiot right now? I'll just stop talking.
Both could be true.
Are you talking about the way that the periodic table itself is structured?
Yeah.
Like some are in the
skip
middle.
Skip some spaces, yeah, and stuff like that. But there's 118 unique elements, right? Is that what we're saying,
yes,
here? Yeah. And if you don't mind listing them for us.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let me, hydrogen.
You know,
lithium.
There was a time in Illinois when you would vote for multiple state representatives.
No kidding.
Yeah. I think each district had three state representatives. So you'd have one senator.
Oh, that's right.
And I think Pat Quinn was the one who would sort of led the fight to end that. But that was back in the 70s.
You could cast three votes for one or one vote for each,
right,
or two and one. You could spread it out that way.
You could do that here.
Yeah. Well, okay, then, hello. However tedious that thing was I was talking about, we do have a little history with it.
Right. There were 32,000 people in the state legislature at the time.
And we got rid of it. So good idea, John.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
Hi.
Here's John Williams.
It wasn't a big thought, but it's early. We've got a full hour here. We're here till 3, weekdays from 1 to 3, Saturdays from 10 a.m. till 12 noon on social. On all social media, WGN King John. Search there and you'll find all sorts of swell stuff. WGN King John on Facebook, Insta, Twitter. Holy cow! Last night, something tragic happened to me. I stayed up till 1 in the morning writing this long, well-researched, thoughtful post on Facebook. And as I was doing it, Patty Vasquez had a really cool band in her show pretty late last night. And suddenly it popped up as a live stream on my Facebook page. So I went, oh, wow, this is really cool. And I clicked over and I was listening to the music. And this band, I mean, there's like 20 people in our performance studio were just cranking it. It was really good. So I'm typing in comments and sending those floating hearts and thumbs up. And when I got doing that, I went back to the Facebook post, which I was pretty much all done with. Had worked on it for about an hour and a half, and it was gone. Gone! And I don't know where it went, and I can't seem to retrieve it or find it. It's not saved in drafts. Then I started Googling around to find things that it might be saved into, and I don't know if Facebook automatically saves it. I don't even know why I'm telling you all of that now, except that on Facebook, you'll find all sorts of fun things on my social media pages. I'm WGN King John. By the way, Michael Avenatti. Michael Avenatti is joining Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantis at 3:20 this afternoon. Man. And then they're giving away a free pair of Hawks tickets at 4:40. Avenatti on with Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantis at 3:20. I wanted to get Avenatti on my show, but Ro and Anna call, and no, they go on that show, not this show. They want the big afternoon drive show. They want the Ro Khan experience. Fine. It'll be fabulous. Avenatti's got a lot to say. I think Avenatti's the kind of guy that if you say, hey, what time is it? He'll tell you how to build a watch factory. In fact, no, here's the Avenatti experience. You say, what time is it? And he'll tell you how to build a cow.
And then he'll say he's got a video of it.
Yes. And then I'll get somebody to say, oh, no, he doesn't. It's a horse, and it's a better horse than his cow or whatever. I don't know. We'll go back and forth. So that should be thoroughly entertaining at 3:20 this afternoon. John, I don't recur the... lots of text today. John, I do not recall the word capitalism occurring in the Constitution. Yeah, that's interesting, but it wasn't... We were giving a quiz earlier. It wasn't a Constitution... Yes, it was. They call it the Constitution quiz. And one of the questions was... I guess it's a citizenship quiz. One of the questions was, what kind of economic system do we have in this country? And market capitalism, there's a couple of options, but a market economy or a capitalistic economy were the correct answers.
Just for a few more months, and then socialism's coming.
I don't understand the problem with socialism. I mean, I think it's the specter of socialism that bothers us more than socialism per se, because I got news for you. We are already socialism. Are you kidding me? I was just looking at my W-2 the other day. My W-2, and the amount of money that I am paying in taxes and just giving to everybody else is a lot. And you must feel the same way, either as a giver or as a receiver. We all put our money in, and then the government decides who gets it, and they hand it out. It's very social. It's very socialistic.
What?
Excuse me, am I not making sense? I think we have a lot of socialism.
Well, we certainly have a lot of government programs that help take care for people in need and things like that.
I think that's my definition.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I think socialism.
Are you overtaxed?
Well, that's not even my point.
Oh, I thought it was.
My point is Social Security. We all pitching in, and then we make these people pay in, and if even they don't want to, that's the system. And then at the end of the day, we hand it out to some folks.
It's called Social Security.
I know.
They used to call it socialism security.
I know, but then they rail against these programs.
It's just the word. It's the words.
I think the specter of socialism is worse than the practice of socialism.
I mean, communism, if we could just change the name.
Sounds great in theory.
Everyone share.
And I think that's exactly what we do. We conflate those. I'm not a communist. I'm just saying that I think we've already made the deal with the socialist devil.
We change words. Look at the Reagan and others made the word liberal a dirty word.
Absolutely.
In the 80s.
That's
so now people are progressives. It's the same thing. You just move to a different word.
The best example of that today is climate change and global warming. Global warming is the wrong phrase.
Right.
They say, well, it was real cold in Chicago yesterday, or they had a snowstorm in Las Vegas. So much for your global warming, fella. No, it's climate change.
Yeah,
that's what happens with the climate change.
That was a mistaken phrase from the beginning.
I think it was. So maybe
liberal worked until they had to run from it.
If you drill down on liberal, well, I'll take that back. I don't know what you're going to drill down and find the word liberal. But doesn't liberal, if you just try and erase the connotation, mean to you open-minded?
Yeah.
If you have a liberal view, you're generous and you're open-minded. I don't know. Maybe that's because I'm a liberal. But here's the word that I think really has been tarnished and has value that we should embrace rather than run from is elite.
The elites, right.
The elites. We know the elites are bad. The elites are bad.
Intellectuals.
Yeah, and intellectuals. My God, the last thing we want is somebody who's really smart, so smart they're the smartest in the class.
Well, we want people who are very smart typically they're more like altruistic.
But well,
no, they're elite. Elite is bad.
I was talking to an author years ago, and I think he taught at Wisconsin, and he was Eastern European, and he wrote a really fun book about mathematicians. It was a funny novel, but somehow we got into the fact that in Eastern Europe or in Europe, you strive to be recognized as an intellectual. You're a rock star. You know, if you're seen that way. And we don't do that here at all. We don't reward that at all.
The problem is that there is a little truth in the sort of stereotype of an elite or an intellectual. Because if you think, well, that also makes them smug or indifferent or not sufficiently appreciative of the struggles of the people who aren't elite or intellectual but are working in factories and schools and radio shows, you know, they're fine, but they're just not elite and they're not intellectual. And if those people who are don't sufficiently appreciate the travails or the background of those other people, then that's not a good thing. That doesn't, you know, make them inherently good leaders. It doesn't inherently make them good school presidents.
No, instead we just suck up to them and pretend we understand them so that we fool them into voting for us.
Or we run from that, and then we get people who are common and base and stupid. And I'm not talking about the president. I'm truly not. But I think if you had to err on one side, I would argue that we'd be better off arguing, you know, erring on the side of the people who are... Well, what is the end of that sentence now?
Intellectual snobs.
No, maybe not. Maybe not. I mean, just as quick as I lay out the case, I can see you in your car driving going, I don't... If I had to err on the side, I would get somebody who better appreciates my life and is from my stock
right.
than somebody who's up there on an ivory hill.
But what you're
ivory
doing,
tower.
but what you're doing is you're arguing with the stereotype that there are disassociated people on the ivory hills, and intellectuals aren't necessarily that way.
Yeah. I guess you need to first figure out, regardless of where it comes from, right? Middle America or the Ivy League, you need to figure out what are the traits that you want. And I want integrity and intelligence. And if I have to suffer through some arrogance, I think I can live with that. But I want somebody who I can trust, who's got integrity and is really smart. Like I say, I want to be king someday. You know why? Because you don't have to be that bright to be king. You're king. But I think to be president or congressman or governor or lord, mayor of Chicago, you got to know stuff. And you got to know the answers to that stuff.
So no plutocracy, no socialism.
No.
Maybe the best thing is like a democratic republic or something.
No, I'm arguing for being king, I think is what I'm doing.
Make sure nobody else wears purple when you wear purple.
Linda, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hey. You know, I had a couple things, but this one thing is I get these robocalls to come out and vote. And yesterday I got one, and the fellow spoke in Spanish. I have a Hispanic surname. And I said, I'm sorry. I says, I don't speak Spanish. I said, and I know what he was saying. I understand some. I says, you know, this is the United States. We speak English. Oh. So he gives me some lady. She could barely speak English herself. And she's calling me to go out and vote today. You know you have to go and vote and all this. And I told her, I says, why did you call for Spanish for me when we're in the United States? We should speak English. You have to know how to read English in order to go in and cast your ballot.
No, you don't. I hear what you're saying, but you don't. The ballot's in Spanish, too.
I was told by others, no, because you can get the ballot in several different languages.
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah.
And I says, you know, that's not right. It's not right. You come to our country. My grandfather was an immigrant, but he became a citizen.
Well, does
and
this,
he told
Linda,
all the kids.
Hey, Linda, yeah. does this change your view at all? Because we don't have an official language.
Well, I think for the country, the language is English. We have several others. You keep your native tongue if you want to.
So you would prefer that when you go to vote, it's all in English. And if you don't know English, then too bad for you. Go learn English.
Well, here's the thing, too. If you become a citizen, you should know English.
Yeah. I think you should.
In order to become and to pass the test.
Well, do you guys know the answer to that? Do you have to? I think you have to demonstrate fluency, sufficient fluency in English in order to become a U.S. citizen. I think you do. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. Linda, that I think in the polling place, they say, okay, so you can read stop signs, you can make change, you can call 911, you're competent in English, but your first language is Spanish. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to cast the best vote you can. So we're going to give it to you in Spanish as well because you're better at that. Now, you're cool with that, right?
No.
I mean, I think there are ballots in Chicago.
But you know what I noticed on the bottom of the ballot and when I went in today?
Yeah.
It's in several different languages.
I know. Well,
written.
It's a multi-ethnic city. I'm sorry, Steve, you were going to say what about
I was going to say
now?
That. There are ballots printed in Polish, I think Chinese. It depends on where you live.
Yeah.
And you know what? If I go to that country and I become a citizen, are they going to put it in English for me?
Probably. No, but think about that. Think about that. Well, but here's the point. So say you go move to Poland or, you know, like we have Polish language on our ballot here. Say you are now a citizen of Poland. You met a Pole. He was so handsome. Swept you off your feet. You're living over there now. And you're a Polish citizen. You want to vote in the Polish election. Now, you've learned, and so then you crammed and you learned some Polish. You're not great at it, but you've learned Polish. When you go to vote, wouldn't it be nice if the ballot also spoke in English to you so that you'd know exactly what the information was you were reading?
I think the language, the country you live in, you should learn their language.
Yeah, I got it. Hey, Linda, listen, Elif is in my ear saying I got to take a break. I'm glad you're listening to us in English. Have a good day.
I know a couple of other languages, too, a little bit.
Oh you do? Okay. Really?
Yes.
So how and what are the other languages you're passable in?
I've learned, well, I worked 30 years in a plant, and it was, we learned a lot of Croatian, Polish, and Slovak.
How about that? Okay, I got to go.
Okay, bye.
Bye, Linda. Have a good day. So even though she's a little multilingual, she wants everybody to speak English, even in the polling place. It's 2:21. I'm not 100% sure. Elif, I'm putting you to work today, but I think you have to pass some kind of English test to become a U.S. citizen. Not 100% sure. Maybe you could look for that on me. Look that up for me, too. I'm getting mixed signals about whether or not you have to pass an English competency test in order to become a U.S. citizen. I don't know. Steve, do you know the answer to that?
Well, we have a coworker who became a naturalized citizen, and I've sent an email to him, and I haven't heard back yet.
Okay. Did you send it to him in English? Because maybe
I have a friend from Ireland who became a citizen, and I can barely understand him.
Yeah, no kidding. Jen, do you know the answer to that? You seem to be real savvy about all things civic.
Oh, I don't know about
except
that.
Except for that part where you kind of bailed on that last person.
I do know that my great-great-grandmother, I believe it was it born an American citizen, left and went and married great-great-grandfather or whatever, and then came back here and she wasn't a citizen any longer. Because she had gone to Italy and got married.
Really?
So she had to do. Yeah, she had to take the test all over again. That's what I was told. But that's what I was told.
That may be the truth that you were told that.
But that didn't happen back then?
If she was born here, I don't think
you can't.
Unless she relinquished her citizenship.
That might have been what it was to get married in another country.
Italy required that, and she said toodles to the U.S. of A.
You know, I wish that I had somebody alive that I can ask this.
Well, you can ask
us. We just don't know the answer.
Well, I still think that, okay, so while I don't know the answer to do you have to demonstrate competency to become a U.S. citizen, when you go into the polling place, unlike that last caller, I think you should put it in whatever language. If that person is eligible to vote, let's help them cast an intelligent vote.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's not real complicated, there's a lot of words on there. Some of them you don't see every day. I mean, why are we making this hard for people?
We spend so much time trying to make it harder to vote.
I'm telling you.
And then we complain because people don't vote.
Listen, this country looks awesome to countries outside of it. And everybody wants to come here because we look great. So if they want to come here and they want the same things as us.
Yeah, finish that.
Then, hey, more power to them. If they're going and they're voting and they're citizens, then,
okay. I thought you were about to say, therefore, you'd better learn our damn language,
Bucky. No, I was going to say that they just want to have the same progress that we do, and they want the same great things.
Your own grandmother spit on this country and gave up her citizenship.
It's funny because what people tell is the truth is not always true. But you as the recipient of that information are now going to tell it. And your telling of it is your truth, but it might not be the truth.
Ask 23andMe.
Yeah, it probably doesn't even, I'm probably not even Italian. So,
right. Producer Elif has worked on this. Producer Elif, what's the thing about English as an official language?
For the reading portion of the naturalization test, you must read one out of three sentences correctly. For the writing test, you must write one out of three sentences correctly, John.
How many of us can do that?
I was going to say, once again, that's beyond the average American.
Is that also with grammar?
Listen, a friend of mine, family, was in some financial trouble and reached out to somebody for some financial advice. And this company that was going to help this friend of mine arrange their affairs better sent them a sort of introductory paragraph and then some analysis of their financial situation. They said, okay, here's what your options are, here's what we think you should do, etc. The paragraph that they sent assisting this person on their finances was so filled with grammatical errors, so worse than the president's, so filled with grammatical errors that I'm like, I don't, it looks like they can help you because the numbers seem to jive, but they can't complete a sentence here. Or they're so indifferent to proper grammar that I'm worried how they're going to handle your finances. I'll tell you what, that is a huge red flag for me. And I know I sound fussy when I say that. But I think if you don't have the competence or consideration to communicate in proper English, like, and I know I'm absurd about this. I don't even like emoticons and emojis. Just to be a pain in the ass, I will write the words smile emoticon at the end of texts I send to people sometimes. Now,
you actually write out emoticon?
I write S-M-I-L-E space E-M-O-T-I-C-O-N.
Oh, John.
I know. We've learned more about me than we need to know. Marshall, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Well, a couple things. You were talking about the word liberal, and I know you have Siri or whatever that is, and you can ask what the definition is, the exact definition. But from what I gather from Webster's, it has to do with someone or the action of being away from tradition, and which is kind of ironic because one of the biggest liberals, then, if that's true, of all time, it was Jesus.
Oh, that's what I'm going to say, the current president. Yeah, right. Either way. But, I mean, the point was that liberal and elite as words now are used as pejoratives. We use that to criticize somebody. Well, they're a liberal or they're elite, as though that's a bad thing. Do you think that being an elite or a liberal is a bad thing?
Well, I don't... with that definition, no, not at all. And matter of fact, I'm a person that, not on purpose, but I tend to be away from the crowd because it seems like the crowds, whatever crowd you're in, is just going downhill fast.
Yeah, you may have a point there. Marshall, they're whispering in my ear again. I got to go away. So you and I will stop talking now. But thank you for calling and thank you for listening.
Sure.
Have a good day. Appreciate it. It's 2:30. Steve's going to do the news. And then, by the way, Steve, I hope you appreciate the fact that I have not dwelled on the Oscars in movie talk because you all got your boat full of that yesterday. But as as Elif and I were talking about this, we began to discuss the veracity of the Green Book. And I said, well, there's a lot of other movies that have told us things that we carry around as true but are not true. Oh, my gosh, this list is amazing. Naturally, we're talking about the election in Chicago, which affects everybody in the state of Illinois, arguably even larger area than that. Folks are voting for mayor and treasurer and alderman and one other one today. Brenda and I went in and voted. And literally, Jen asked me, as I was voting for mayor, we talked about this on the air at the beginning of the program. She said, as you were voting, did you do so enthusiastically? Did you know who you were going to vote when you walked in? And I said no. Do you remember in the opening of the old Mary Tyler Moore show when she sort of indifferently tosses the ground beef into her cart? That's how I felt voting for mayor today. I had a pound of beef in my hand, and I just, whatever. Tossed it in.
That's too bad because I think there's some very good candidates running.
I do, too.
So it wasn't like you weren't upset because there weren't good choices.
I was upset.
Too many to choose from.
One. Also, Steve, don't you think we do this? Jen, we take the candidates and then we spend the whole time just knocking them down.
Oh, I hate that.
And maybe it's all good information, but I think the Tribune has been just telling one bad story about each candidate after another. I think the candidates have all been running ads telling me, you know,
bad stuff about each other.
And so while I had a candidate I was happy to vote for, I didn't do so with a lot of great enthusiasm. I know that's not new, right? This is the way campaigns go. Maybe it's because there were 14 of them all firing salvos at each other. It just seemed like everybody was saying bad things.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite was when the Amara Enya scandal came out, that she was only a half Iron Man instead of a full Iron Man.
Yes, right. She did 71 miles instead of 140 or something like that, right?
Oh, by blasphemy. The way,
and incidentally, this is a tangent, and the show will resume in just moments, but yeah, let me just finish this thought with you. So when that thing came out, that one of the candidates for mayor, who lists herself as a triathlete and an Iron Man finisher or something, and she ran an event in Wisconsin that billed itself as an Iron Man, but I guess an Iron Man event is how many miles, do you know, Jen?
140.6,
but hers was like a half Iron Man, but they still called it an Iron Man. On her bio, it says she's an Iron Man qualifier. And the reason we know this distinction and that she got busted is because there's a guy out there whose avocation is following people's results and seeing if they really did it. Am I right about that?
Oh, yeah. He just did a really great piece on one of my friends. It was all satire, but it was awesome.
Who is this guy?
I don't know who the marathon investigation person is, but
I read the source of that, and you knew who this guy was right away. It was like, you know, themarathondebunker.com.
Yeah.
And I thought, what is that? Okay. Yeah. Don't you have macrame or something else to do than go around, you know, popping people's phony marathon balloons? I mean, you shouldn't brag about that, but really, that's your thing?
Especially people who aren't breaking any records by any means. But
Right. If you're qualifying for the Olympics, yeah, there's a place for that. But uh-huh. Jen's friend? Seriously?
Wouldn't it be great if he was 450 pounds?
Yeah.
Or
you
she.
You didn't run a marathon.
You liar.
You only run 70 miles, you bum.
Vicki, you're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hi there. How you doing today?
Good.
When you're talking about the English and different languages,
yes,
when
you go to get
a license by a semi, you have to take the test in English.
So for your CDL, if you want to get a license, you have to demonstrate proficient English.
In English, yes.
And I think I'm okay with that, too, right? Like, I was arguing that it's right that in the polling place, the instructions are in Spanish and Chinese. But the rules of the road, the stop signs and stuff, those aren't in Spanish and Chinese. So you have to be able to speak English, I would say, to drive commercially.
Commercially, but not
exactly.
Privately.
You know, really, now that I think about it, Steve, I think you should pass the test, at least the portion of the test, in English.
Well, I mean, I went on vacation a few years ago in Spain and drove around Spain. How would you fix that?
Well, okay, let's face it. We all know generalized signs.
Right.
That means stop, right?
Yeah, that's why I guess they do that, too. They'll give you the sign and say, what is this, without even putting the word in there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they're still written parts of the test. And yes, they do get some help. Some of them do.
I wonder if you have to be able to read. I mean, I wonder if you're illiterate, if they'll have someone read the test to you.
Yeah, think about that.
Yes, they will.
They will. All right. Well, then that would seem to favor then helping people in the language they're most comfortable with.
Driving is a privilege, not a right.
Said the traffic department. Thanks for the phone call. Glad you're listening, Vicki. I appreciate you being able to join us. Glenn wants to comment on that. Hey, Glenn, you're on WGN Radio. What's on your mind, Glenn? Hi.
Hey, John. Hey, I just thought I'd add an input. The comment about CDL licenses being only given in English is incorrect. I'm a 20-year instructor for a big trucking company, and President Clinton, back when he was president, changed the regulations in regards to that you can take the written test in your base language and still be able to get a CDL. Even though older drivers like myself aren't a big fan of it, it is allowable to take it in whatever your home base language is.
Mm. Well, I'm very liberal about this sort of thing. There's that word again today. But I don't care how you take the test or if you can read English or not. I want to make sure you're a safe driver. And if there's something that's scrolling across that electronic digital billboard as you're going, say, on the Eisenhower coming out of downtown and it tells you something, You need to be able to read that. If you're not good enough in English, I don't think you should be driving. Do you agree with me on that?
Well, I agree completely. I stopped training because of the fact that there's an issue in regards to a language barrier that's out there. There are very, very good drivers out there who speak several different languages, more than I'll ever be able to speak.
Yeah.
But you're right. When you can only read the first street name of a four-name off-ramp, that's an issue.
I appreciate your listening. Thank you for the call, Glenn.
Sure.
Appreciate you straightening us out.
We just need a multi-language sign for the North Avenue Bridge of the Height, and then maybe trucks will stop getting stuck underneath that viaduct.
Oh, has that happened?
It happens like once a week. It's nutty. Yeah, trucks can't fit under North Avenue. Well, under the Kennedy at North Avenue.
So I have in front of me 44 true story Oscar movies that ignored the truth from cracked.com, which is my go-to source for important information for America. 44 true story Oscar movies that ignored the truth. I won't do them all, but I read through this. And what was the movie, Elif, that got us going on this? Was it The Green Book? That's the one we were talking about, and whether or not all of the details in that Green Book movie were true or not. And then they write about some other movies you may have seen. You saw Titanic. In the film, the crew is shown sending off half-filled lifeboats, panicking, even murdering passengers. In reality, the workers filled the boats to capacity, and many of the crew sacrificed themselves so others could survive. One officer's portrayal was so insulting that studio executives flew to his hometown to apologize to the hometown, to his surviving family members. I didn't know that. But yeah, if you asked me what it was like, I would have said, well, they were so disorganized and selfish, you know, they were so interested in saving their own lives that the boats left the Titanic half full. This says that's not true at all. It was quite the contrary. Fargo, at the beginning of Fargo, the title card states, "This is a true story. The events depicted in this film took place in Minnesota in 1987. At the request of the survivors, the names have been changed. Out of respect for the dead, the rest has been told exactly as it occurred." Not a lick of that is true. That's the dang craziest, untruest, awesomest movie you'll ever see, Fargo. I don't have a big problem with that. Because I think when you watch that movie, you go, yeah, that didn't happen. That's just poetic license at the beginning. 12 Years a Slave, a lot of that not true. Steve Jobs, the biopic, a lot of that not true. Lawrence of Arabia, Gone with the Wind, I'm reading through these. Aaron Brockovich, we just watched a lot of Aaron Brockovich the other night. And we watched in particular the scene at the end where she brings to the woman who's, she's got cancer. She's not going to live long because of that plant that's nearby. It was polluting the groundwater. And this woman's now got cancer. Everybody's got cancer. And she's not going to be around long. And Aaron Brockovich walks in with her boyfriend. And she gives her a check for $5 million. And it's so much money. And everybody is so happy. Here's what it says. Everyone's delighted at the end of the trial. But the actual plaintiffs were far from satisfied. Brockovich's firm delayed sharing any of the settlement with the townsfolks, took an unusually large share of the children's compensation, and charged eight figures in expenses beyond what was originally agreed. And by the way, eight figures, that's $10 million or more, right? Real-life plaintiff Carol Smith added, "I wish the truth would come out." I didn't know that part. Boy, that kind of kills that last scene I saw on TV the other night. Argo, do you remember Argo? You knew a lot of that was just too good to be true. The plot involving getting Americans out of Iran by disguising them as a film crew scouting a location. Do you remember the scene? I think that's when we're at the airport at the last minute. You know, the plane's coming in. The bad guys are coming to stop the plane. Anyway, the movie makes it seem like this was a CIA idea. In fact, Canada was responsible for at least 90% of the operation. The operation was widely referred to as the Canadian Caper. I'll give you one more. Catch Me If You Can. Everything in Catch Me If You Can is, you know, so good that you worry about the authenticity of it. Frank Abagnale's dad, being a hustler, is made up. In fact, the real Frank Abagnale Sr., the father, was not only a straight shooter, but also one of Frank Jr.'s first victims, since the kid started his criminal life with petty scams involving his dad's credit card. The dad was a good guy. The kid scammed his dad with the credit card. But the way the movie acts, the father was himself a bit of a crafty guy. And one more. Elif says break. I have time just to read one more short paragraph. Hoosiers. I love the movie Hoosiers. I don't want any of that to not be 100% true. The team was not, in fact, coached by a grizzled guy with a short temper and demands for military-style discipline. Okay, so the Gene Hackman character is overplayed. I can live with that. It also was not as if Milan, the school that won, surprised anyone with their performance in the state tournament. They were a small school, sure, but they'd been on the big stage before the previous year. And Marvin Wood's first season as the head coach, he took that team to the state semifinals. And almost all of those key players from that squad returned the year that they won it all. So the movie depicts it as like nobody had ever heard of Milan. Who are they? They can't win. In fact, they were in the state semifinals the year before and they were coming back. So they had to be considered a favorite, right? I hope, though, that the scene where when they walk into the big gym, the Hinkle Fieldhouse there in Indianapolis, and the one kid gets on the other kid's shoulders and they measure the hoop and it's 10 feet. And he says that seems to be the same height as the hoop and Milan. And they all smiled and they got it. I hope that scene's true, because if it's not, it'll break my heart. I'm all done, right? So let's go to Studio A from Studio D. And by the way, that seems to be about right. Rokon, Anna DeVlantis, A. John Williams Show, C minus, maybe a D.
Oh, I bet you were. Were you a great student, John?
I was a classic B student.
Classic B student.
I tried my best. God bless me. But I was.
Is that your mom's voice you're channeling?
I know. Oh, Johnny tries so hard.
God bless him.
I did my homework. But, you know, Terry Glenn and Lynn Knutson, Mary Hathaway, those people, A's. And I don't know how they did it. I don't know how they did it. But I tried my best, Anna.
I bet you did. Well, you've done well. You've done very well.
I don't know what that was, but
Don't mind.
Were you going to do a test of knowledge at this moment to see exactly what John could get right?
What time is it, John?
It's time for me to get out of the way.
Got that one right.
Having a really good
time.
There you go.
Happy Election Day.